Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Star Fellows, your favorite podcast from a galaxy far, far away. I am your Dungeon Master, Rob, and with me, as always, are my friends, Hannah.
Hello.
Amelia-sam.
Hello.
And Brennan.
How you doing?
Doing good. Well, kind of. Depends on how you guys are doing.
Not good. Is the answer to that.
I'm fine.
Better than Akala.
Yeah, Akala's not doing good.
I'm not nervous about it literally at all.
Because she's doing bad.
She's doing so good. I don't know what you're talking about. She's evil. She's more powerful than
because of the dark side of the Force.
She is more powerful than she has ever felt.
It's because the dark side's bad, so she can't be doing good because she's doing bad things.
Okay.
Just Akala is bad. Jokes. She's bad. She's really, really bad.
Yeah.
Where we last left off, you guys successfully defeated Sue after, like has been mentioned, Akala fell in a moment of rage and hatred to a darker side of the Force,
Corrupting
her beloved Kyber Crystal soul in the process. During that fight, L had his right hand and part of his right head tail lopped off by Sue in the heat of combat. After successfully defeating your enemy and essentially ending the conflict for the future of the Power and Lights District, you were left in a swirling, roiling room with a bleeding, corrupted Corpus Corsanti Kyber Crystal the size of a large building in front of you. And you were menaced by a specter, a wraith that had been living dormantly in the body of Sue, which was banished for the time being by the timely entrance of Kobe Cornelius, as well as Jedi Masters Oogley and Maxi Mule. And that is where we open. Kobe has banished the wraith in a large beam of sunlight that he cast forth over your shoulder, draping you all in warm sunlight and, for the moment, chasing the specter away. Akala lies motionless, slumped alongside Oko Valnim, having been just sucker-punched by L in the back of the head.
It wasn't the head. It was between the shoulder blades.
Right in the kisser. Just hit her right in the mouth.
Phased in front of her and smacked her down. It was...
Literally was facing the opposite direction. It's fine.
That's how I remember it.
L, I imagine that you are knelt down in a daze by Akala.
Whoa, that's so true. I am knelt down in a daze by Akala. I think the adrenaline from the situation has started to wane a bit. In the heat of battle, getting your arm cut off, and I think L is kind of in what we might call an excruciating pain for multiple different reasons, but goes to just pick up and sort of cradle Akala's unconscious body.
Very well.
I can't actually pick her up because someone killed my strength score for no reason, but
you also only have one hand.
there was a very good reason to do that. But...
I could fireman carries Akala, I could figure it out.
That's a very fun way to cradle. a dead person.
We can play with exhaustion mechanics. How many levels of exhaustion do you think El has? Would we say like all of them, maybe?
At least. Rob, one day, I'll tell you what I told Brennan in season 2. One day I will be DMing and you will be the player.
We love each other.
Remember this.
I am just the reflection of my players in that I just cast into being whatever it is that is appropriate for you guys to have fun. So this says more about you sad fucks than it does about me. Or at least that's what I'm telling myself, because the guilt would be crushing. So you are knelt down by Akala.
Crush me because I have a fucking 9 strength.
With the loosest grip possible, you have gotten Akala cradled into your lap, sort of, as you kind of slump over in pain and in concern over Akala. Master and Rama at this point, I think, having not healthy, does not have any catastrophic injuries. I think it makes sense for you to be conscious in this moment as well.
Picturing myself, you know, like still the only one standing up, although, you know, I'm not bleeding out and I have all my limbs. So, you know, I'm doing well in that guard. I was just picturing as soon as they come in screaming for a medic.
So as a last man standing, yeah, you do shout for a medic, and Maxie touches your shoulder and says, "They'll be along with us shortly. We're the front guard to clear the way through the tunnels. We'll tend to them in a second." And you see, you and Elle see Master Ugle walk past you know, this cluster of people, as well as step over some dead bodies of a crushed Trandoshan and by several piles of corpses. And he looks up at the crystal, which is you know, spinning slowly itself, but roiling in still a mass of lightning and dense purple smoke, and its corrupted red color bleeds forth from the edges of the crystal and drips down into the endless hole beneath it. And he says,
"Maxie Colby, I require your assistance. The heart of the planet weeps with the blood of the innocent. We must do our duty and end its despair."
And he shrugs off his outer brown Jedi robes to reveal just black utilitarian pants, bare feet, and a like white undershirt that kind of comes over in sort of rounded places over his froggy body. And with his broad shoulders, he extends his arms up to the crystal and begins slowly floating up to it. Kobe goes first before aiding Ugle over to UL and wraps you in his arms and says,
"Thank the spheres you survived. I'm so, so sorry for not being able to go after you. You have done amazing. We will take care of the rest."
And after embracing you, he stands up, and he and Maxie both walk over to Ugle. And he, as he begins floating up into the roiling mass of the storm, he reaches out and grabs part of the crystal. And he begins to sing from both of his Ephorian throats this like thunderous, deep basso throat singing that fills the room. Echoes along the long halls of the cave, and as it does, you see the sound waves from his voice ripple through the smoke and even striations through it. And he begins singing, and in this long, warbling voice, you see and feel the energy of the room start to change. From very chaotic and negative to now kind of combative against this singing voice that is booming throughout the cave. The other Jedi Masters stand behind him, an even distance apart, forming sort of a triangle with him in the air, and they lift up their arms as well, lending him strength and support to the Force. Now, at this point, El, I think that your vision would start to fail you, for lack of a better term. I think with the chaos of the room, while you're paying attention and can see what's happening, I think much of it is lost to you in your pain. Rama, what you notice is that as this ritual is happening to the crystal in this room, in Master Ugle's other hand that is not touching the crystal, you start to see a swirling red ball start to form. And as the color of the crystal starts changing incrementally from this deep bloody red to a faded milky white, that ball in his hand gets larger and larger, and you see that it too is the color and tone of crimson blood. Now, you also feel during this some electricity start to buzz off of your armor, like static electricity in the air starts leaping from plate to plate, and a massive lightning bolt from below the crystal strikes through and sends lightning strikes chaotically all across the room, and it thunders. And you see that Ugle himself is enwrapped in lightning for a moment and is straining. And Kobe calls up to him and says, "Ugle, we must hurry. If the crystal remains unstable, we could lose the whole district."
"Peace and calm, friend. The crystal desires to sleep and be calm. Let it be so."
And the clouds themselves start to fade as his singing fades and the crystal is slowly purified in front of you. When he is finished, he drops the red ball in his hand, and Rama, you see it impact the metal flooring of the cave with a loud metallic thump, as if it must have weighed several hundred pounds. The crystal before you is now a calm milky white, and lightning now streams through it in majestic and calm arcs up from below and dispersing to the towers and the different ducts that lead around the Argoplex. After the crystal's purified, a few moments go by as the Jedi catch their breath, and in coming a few minutes later is a set of jet troopers in full garrisoned military armaments, with helmets and plate armor, as well as jetpacks on their back, and with them comes medical supplies and some advanced technology to try to extricate you from the cave. Akala and Oko are immediately placed onto stretchers that are then able to be hauled out by various hover equipment through the treacherous terrain of the caves. Ugle goes ahead with Akala and Oko, while El, I would imagine you would also be lifted onto a stretcher since you're missing an arm, so I think that you would also be excavated out with them. Do you have any objection?
I don't have an objection. I would like to say something. I imagine Elle at this point is, you know, very out of it. But when they, you know, being near, like, essentially right on top of Akala and Oko in that area, as they come by, when Master Ugle comes by, he's going to say, Akala's not well.
Yes, it appears so. I do not trouble yourself to speak too much. You are missing quite a lot of blood. We will resolve everything momentarily.
Yeah, you need to keep her away from Oko when they come to.
He looks at you quizzical for a second, not quite understanding, and says,
I do not understand. Why would I need to separate them? I mean, they will be, naturally, as they will be put in different places, of course, but can I ask why?
Akla. I think, where's the Kyber crystal?
Think in Akla's hand still.
I saw that, like, be red. I'm just gonna kind of, like, gesture toward her hands, where I've probably been staring at the Kyber crystal itself for a while.
He bends down and like unfurls Akla's like unconscious hand and sees the like red and cracked Kyber crystal and says,
I see she is indeed unwell.
He picks it up gingerly with the tips of his fingers and places Soul into a small leather pouch that he has and ties it and keeps it on his person and says,
"Well, this is, you've done more than enough, El. Allow us to accommodate you and to take care of the rest."
I'm going to pass out. And then El just falls unconscious.
He catches your head and lays and helps you onto a mobile like hover stretcher. And you guys make your way out. Rama, I think that you can accompany on foot Kobe and Maxi throughout the rest of the cave. There isn't too much to see here. After a time, the jetpack troopers will make their way through the caves, and they've retrieved all of the unconscious and injured folk. On the way out, you and Maxi and Kobe pass the large the lake chamber where the dragon snake's body is still there decomposing. And as you guys like kind of jetpack and jump your way across, you hear Maxi say, "Who would have thought a beast like that was down here this whole time?" And then you hear Kobe call after him, "We best not wait to find out what is still lurking here then." And you guys move through the room in the cave. And then you get to the room where the cave-in occurred, where you were sitting. Yes.
Really quick, could I say something while we're in this room?
Yeah.
Whenever we jetpack past the holding cells, I'd like to mention to both of them, "Hey there, really, really, really old guy in a metal suit and or a really old woman with a gun. I don't suppose any civilians got out talking about a giant snake or something."
"Oh, dear heavens, do you mean old Debbie and old Davy?"
"Yeah, they're, they're still kicking, right? Just wondering."
"I haven't seen them recently, but Debbie did escort a group of survivors out of the cave a little while ago. They, in fact, blew a hole in the top of the cave, to get daylight, apparently with some explosives and ammunition that they had been given or had otherwise acquired. I do not know who all made it out of that expedition, but they did join us at the tail end of the battle in the Argoplex, which was quite bloody, so we'll need to take an account of the survivors, but it's best to not worry about that at the moment."
"Good." "Thank you, I appreciate the thought."
"Sure, again, no promises, but let's keep moving." And anyway, so you move back farther through the caves to the room where the cave-in occurred, and as Maxi said, there was now a giant hole blown in the top of it, where there's now daylight shining down, and you can hear the cries and the ambient noises of speeders and triage units tending to people topside. You guys are able to jetpack and otherwise clamber your way out. And on the surface, you see that the scene above is carnage. There's hundreds of bodies and destroyed droids laying about in the Argoplex. People have started lining up bodies of the fallen into the beginnings of rows, while dozens of speeders with hospital colors dash across the landscape, triaging the wounded and ferrying people to different hospitals around the planet. You see a large number of dead Hive soldiers and Trandoshans, and some people that look like, or and a decent amount of people, rather, that look like they were Republic soldiers or otherwise part of the Jedi Order. Rama, since you asked about it, you do see, in a distant corner of the Argoplex, as you're kind of coming into daylight, the form of a old man laying under the tree about, 100 yards away.
Wait, laying? Like, down?
Like, laying down, like, propped against a tree.
Alright. I'm assuming he's sleeping. Can I sprint over?
Yeah.
Or limp over? Not a lot of HP left.
Yeah, you limp over, and Maxi calls back after you. Roma, where are you going? And you, like...
I'll be right back. I gotta see about a friend.
So you limp across the field, and as you get closer and closer, you're able to make out more of what you're seeing, and you do see the clear, like, dark red colors of Davy's exosuit under this tree, and a walker next to it that you recognize to be old Debbie's. And as you walk over and approach, you see old Davy in his suit lying under the tree with his eyes closed, with Debbie cradled in his arms, and it looks like they're both sleeping peacefully.
Thank God.
I don't suppose I see my gun around, or both guns, maybe leave like a little sticky note, like XOXO.
Yeah, in fact, you do see your guns like bandoliered over Debbie's walker, and you also see around this tree, like, you count them out, and there's like 24 dead Hive soldiers and otherwise like Red Maw affiliates under this tree that they're sleeping under.
Awesome. I'm just gonna like... just casually see if I could pick them both up without waking them. And then...
I'll make a sleight of hand check.
That's a 16.
16. Yeah. So you're able to pick them up without disturbing them. And you make no noise, and you pick up your guns and you belt them on.
Sweet. And then I still have that single shot pistol we took from the mayor, right?
Yeah, I don't know that I actually ever intended it to be like a single shot. I think what I said, reflecting back, is that it had a round in the chamber, meaning that he was keeping it dangerously. But I think it can hold more than one shot. It's not right.
I thought it was a revolver.
Yeah. Like a revolver.
I'm gonna replace sorry.
Ignore me.
I'm going to open a revolver and make sure it's still got the one round in it.
Okay, yeah, you open up the revolver and it indeed does have the singular round in it.
I'm gonna shut it and put it on the walker, take out a knife from my survival kit, something sharp, and then carve a notch into the revolver for each head I see on the tree.
Nice. So you sit down for what must be 5 or 6 minutes next to Davy and Debbie, and you start carving into this revolver. And as you get a few strokes in, something catches your eye, and you look up at Debbie and Davy, and you start seeing little points of light materialize into the air. And you look down again, make a few more notches, and you look up and you see more and more of them streaming up to the sky. And then it seems like all at once a whole wave of them come up from under the tree and rustle the leaves. And you look back and Debbie and Davy are gone.
What? Davy, come back! Debbie! Say something, get back down here! I can't lose you too as well. Damn it.
I'm gonna take it and just hold it up like a flare and hope the bullet looks pretty. Just poof, and fire off a singular salute.
You fire off a singular shot. From a mix of the concussion of the gunpowder and the wind that is streaming through the leaves, you hear what seems to be faintly, almost indistinguishably, a voice cradle your ears through the wind that says, "Good hunting night."
No. I'm gonna fire up the jetpack and see if I can follow up with the light.
Sure. So yeah,
I'm not ready yet. I'm not ready yet, Davy.
So you launch up into the night sky, following these motes of light up into the air, and you climb up and up and up. You climb enough where you like start to get like some ice forming on the outside of your armor. And at this like precipice, you see the motes start kind of swirling and reflect in the sky, and you can see kind of in the clouds vague shapes seeming to wave you goodnight, and you return down to the earth.
I'm gonna clutch the walker and just not you guys too. I've lost so much.
You feel a hand on your shoulder, and you look to your side to see Maxie standing there with you.
I'm sorry for your loss, Rama. I knew them as well. They were a good couple.
It's your loss too. It's the whole damn planet's loss.
Yes. Yes, I suppose. They were good people. Lights in the darkness. Good for the community. But if you were to ask them, I think they would say that we should not pity them. They lived long lives, and they knew when their time was coming. Warriors, all soldiers, even if they won't admit it, privately wish that at the end of all their battles they could sit down peacefully under a tree with the love of the life in their arms and drift painlessly into the night.
Guess I'm selfish for wanting to keep them here. I've lost enough.
Yes, but they are now one with the Force and with everything else. And for that, they will never truly be gone. Especially not where it counts most.
And he taps you at the front of your chest armor with a thud.
What crack act just fucking weirdo came up to you and told you that I had a heart?
You have a heart, Rama. Bigger than you might realize, in fact.
I'm going to grab him behind his head and do the little, the kind of the equivalent of like a Mandalorian like kiss, like sign of affection. It's kind of like in the second movie when Jango gets his head cut off and baby Boba like puts his forehead to Jango's helmet.
Yeah. The sacred Mandalorian called, helmet touch.
It's called something in the lore. I can't remember what it is. But it's
called
interesting,
a smoochie.
Interestingly enough, if you do it like violently, it's also like throwing the gauntlet down for conflict as well as a sign of affection if you do it like slowly, which I think is really very funny. And I'm not challenging him to a duel, so I'm just gonna lightly touch foreheads and be like,
thanks. I appreciate it.
Anytime. Now, we should really get you some help. let's get back to the order.
Right, I'm going to holster now all four of my guns and follow him back.
Yeah, I will say, like, before you, like, leave the scene, you do see that, like, even though, like, their bodies disappeared, like, some personal effects of them stayed behind. In particular, like you look at Davy's armor, and there appears to be, like, on his like arm that didn't have the like leaf blade that he gave to Akala, he had a data pad, and it looks like it has some, like engineered components to it that were pretty vital to like the systems of the armor, which might be valuable for you to take with you. You think that you, yeah, like it looks like you might be able to incorporate it into your armor.
Woo!
Great. Okay, cool. So, Rama, you are escorted by Maxie to a speeder, which takes you guys back to the Order, and you are ushered to a hospital with your, or the like hospital wing of the Jedi Order itself, and you and your compatriots are put into hospital, like medical attention. So we're going to say that from there, 7 days is going to pass. And we're going to begin with Elle waking up in a Bacta tank. So you like come into consciousness, like floating in this test tube tank. with an air mask and like various other intravenous like lines into your body. The pain is mostly gone, but you feel like, I would imagine, well, I don't know how you would feel waking up in a Bacta tank, but, you know, I assume not good. You tell
yeah,
me.
Yeah, I can shed some light on that. Elle, like, wakes up, and there's, like, a second of panic, I think, at the idea of, like, waking up underwater. Before, just for like a fraction of a second, really, as his senses sort of come to him and he puts together everything that happened beforehand, where I am now, kind of replaying it all at an incredible speed through his head, looks down at his arm, still gone, but definitely a lot less painful, and sort of looks out. Do I see anyone in this room?
Yeah, so through the hazy water, like, you see the, like, beeps of different medical droids, and you also see the form of, like, a dark-skinned human man meditating in front of you, which you would likely deduce is Kobe. Yeah, so...
So I think there's this sort of level of relief. In a way... I think at the end of the battle, that disorientation and feeling of overwhelming has dissipated. You know, things are moving slower again, but there's still just so much uncertainty and so much swirling around his head that I don't think he quite knows how to go forward. But he is just going to kind of raise his left arm and, like, knock against the glass tube.
You see Master Cornelius's like head like dip up from a slump very suddenly, and then he stands, and you hear him like call vague things out to somebody that you can't see, and then rushes over to you and starts like climbing like the apparatus for the Bacta tank to start like getting you out. So after a few moments, you feel the or you can hear, rather, and kind of see the difference as the top of the tube opens up and several, like, mechanical droid arms, like, kind of hook you under your arms and your torso and pull you up. Kobe quickly helps you get unhooked from all of the medical equipment and wrapped in a towel. They left you some modesty in giving you, like, essentially a Speedo to wear in the tank, but otherwise you're just wrapped in a bunch of towels very quickly and taken to a more conventional hospital bed. Right, so it's just you and Kobe in a hospital room, and he takes a seat next to you once you're kind of made comfortable and says, welcome back. How are you feeling?
I feel like I got... hit by a speeder and just kind of left out for a few days.
Yeah. I'm sorry about all of this.
I mean, you don't really gotta be sorry. Unless you were the one who did all that crystal shit, which you weren't, so.
No. You're right. Sue and the Red Maw are responsible for all of the carnage that has happened recently. And you and the rest of you are thanked for stopping her. You're kind of heroes now. I mean, you were always my hero, but now the press is saying so too.
Oh, gross. I don't have to, like, talk to anyone, do I?
Oh, well, about that, if you're up for it, there has been talks of a medal ceremony, and there has been, a lot of leaks to the press that the Jedi are unhappy about, but, well, I guess let me explain a few things. Are you up to it? I don't want to rush your...
Yeah,
your
no, this is good. Process. Also, we need a debrief about the... Yeah, good, go, shoot.
Okay, Let's start with the battle and the aftermath. The battle on the ground for the Power and Lights District raged on after you guys went into the tunnel. Hundreds of Hive soldiers and possessed citizens flooded the Argoplex from all around us, and we found out later that this was a trap set deliberately, assuming that we would come to retake it as soon as possible. The battle lasted for who knows how long exactly, but ultimately the Jedi and the rest of the forces were able to subdue them enough so that we could once again clear the Argoplex, though the casualties were considerable. Once things started to turn, the Hive launched their assault on the planet from outer space as well, sending out fighter ships and bombers to attack the capital district. Now, we were managed to rout them pretty quickly with reinforcements from a couple other planets like Shelly and Typhon, but the Hive main ship, the Beehive satellite thing, was able to jump into hyperspace before we were able to do enough damage to effectively maroon it somewhere. So, while no further damage was done from outer space to the planet, they did get away, which, you know, right now it's kind of the Jedi's biggest priority is finding wherever they ended up. So there's going to be a galaxy-wide search for one ship in the heart of the universe, and who knows how long that'll take. Anyway, the refugees, the citizens that you and Rama and Akala helped free did make their way back to the surface, so that's good, including some very well-connected individuals in that group. I'm not sure if you had any prior connection with any of them, but there were some family members of senators in that group of riffraff that was caged underneath the Power and Lights District, and there's some families that are very grateful for your help. That also brings me to Oko. Tuuruk Valnim has accepted that the bounty was in fact complete and is incredibly embarrassed that his daughter participated in perhaps the biggest terrorist attack in Krasanti history in the recent millennium. So, as you can imagine, he was very eager to pay out that bounty. So, you and presumably Rama as well are a million credits richer. What else? So, about the press. I think from a combination of the refugees and some loose lips around the Citadel, tales have spread of a mysterious trio that plunged into the dark heart of the Argoplex and rid us of a threat to our planet. And also, we were caught on camera coming into the Argoplex when we were making our initial infiltration. We look we look great.
Oh, good. You know. Thank God.
The press has been playing a reel of you killing the, what was it called? The big cat monster.
Hold on.
Nexu.
Oh, yeah, the Nexu.
Yeah, yeah. Footage of you killing the Nexu has been all over the internet. But this is not to flame our vanity. This is to say that the story of you three making a heroic stand against a proto-Sith Lord underneath our very streets has caught the imagination of the general public, and the press has come to dub the Argonauts for your faithful defense of the Argoplex. And they want to give you medals.
All right. Sure. What does this mean for me? Because, like, if people ask questions, they're going to be like, oh, you got a lightsaber, you're a Jedi. I'm going to be like, nope, I'm banished. Yeah, what's the deal there?
Well, that's a good question. As you can imagine, the Jedi are in a little bit of a pickle.
Yeah, I would imagine so.
You know, between you and me, I think Master Grimwald finds the whole thing pretty amusing. But
I'm be honest, I do too. I mean, well, kind of glances down at his arm, some parts more than others.
Yeah. You should talk to Rama about that, by the way. He's been floating some ideas with Bronze about how to deal with that. But yes, the Jedi are in a bit of a political pickle because, well, your name, as well as Akala's and Rama's, is pretty public, and everyone not only thinks, but thinks correctly, rather knows that you're a hero. And frankly, if the Jedi decide to banish or, I mean, God forbid, publicly execute a hero of the people, it would be bad for our reputation.
Yeah, I kind of put those two together on my own.
Not to mention the obvious, very stupid and short-sighted as well. So, on the other hand, they have made a show within the Order to not tolerate deserters or those that become corrupted to the darker side of the Force. And technically, you've done neither. You were just misplaced for a while, and otherwise the upstanding model of a Jedi Knight. So, this is all to say, the Council has softened their stance a bit to allow you to be an independent researcher for the Jedi Order, free to conduct your your mission or whatever it is that you'd like to do, as long as it is still off-world, I think is their idea.
So I just need to very graciously make myself scarce once this all dies down.
More or less. I don't think that the Jedi Order is going to be openly antagonistic to you, and I don't think that you'll be in bad standing of any sort, but I think, at least until they warm up to the idea a bit more, it would be wise to continue with your original plan of hunting down the rest of the artifacts that the Bendu has asked you to retrieve.
And what about Akala?
And he kind of, like, his face hardens and he kind of leans in and says, I don't know. We don't really have a good idea of what exactly happened down in the chamber of the Corpus Quasanti. Ugle has told me about Sol's crystal and its corruption. We didn't want to draw any conclusions before either of you had the chance to wake up and explain to us what had happened. But while we're on the topic, and before you do explain, I want to emphasize again that Akala is also considered a hero of the people, and for similar reasons, the Jedi Order is a bit pressed about what to do. Though this has not gone very public within the Order yet. Only us in this room and Ugle and Akala really know about Sol. But it's not a secret that we feel like we can keep forever.
Yeah, and I think it Akala is a danger to herself and others if you just... I mean, she tried to kill Oko. There was a part of the battle that I fell unconscious, and when I came back, she was... I mean, even before then, she was doing some disturbing things. We were in the heat of battle, so I didn't say anything. There wasn't anything to say. I figured I'd just talk to her after it was over. But once it was over...
What sorts of disturbing things?
Can I just sort of like run through what I like? Can we just say that I?
Yeah.
Because I has been a while.
Press X to explain.
X,
yeah.
Tap 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 tap. Dialogue. Yeah, so I tell him, like,
oh my
everything
God.
I remember from the back, right? No, because I, like, went down and I came back up. Yeah, but...
Yeah, and, so you explain kind of the dark side force powers, the use of lightning, the manifesting a dark version of soul, the whole red crystal thing, the...
Yeah, my thoughts about the forest ghost probably aiming for Akala when he banished
right.
it.
Right, and at the end of it, like, his expression remained pretty, like, neutral, concerned, like, throughout this whole explanation. He says,
I agree that she is a danger to herself and others right now with what you've told me. I can't say more without just being speculative. But this is a long term problem. If the reason the dark side is so dangerous is because we all recognize instinctively that it is much more convenient in life if you can just smite your enemies with a bolt of lightning. And militant critics of the Jedi Order, and, you know, that would label us purists and even pacifists in times with how we handle conflict, don't understand that if you have the power of the universe in your hand and you misuse it once out of convenience or out of anger or spite, you lose what made you worthy to have that control over those forces of nature in the first place. Akala, it seems, made a commitment at some point in those battles to no longer heed the wisdom of restraint and reluctance. And like a drug, it pulls you in. Because once you make that decision a first time, the second time is half as monumental. The defenses that you put up to avoid that sort of spiral start to crumble, and it becomes easier and easier to indulge it. Which is why the consequences for turning so dramatically are heavy. But we may have some circumstances that weigh in her favor. Ule, Maxi, and I can all attest that that environment was basically... I mean... Ule makes it look easy. And Maxi is a good straight face as well as I do, but being in that place was deeply troubling.
Yeah, that shit was fucked up.
Yes, said very well. It was fucked up. And it fucked Akala up. But that is only an excuse and not necessarily an explanation.
I think another reason that you should make yourself scarce is because, and I'm not blaming you or anything like that, but she does not act with wisdom when it comes to matters of your life and safety. Akala does not think with the same rational and cool understanding that she would with any other person, even ones that she cares about very deeply. And it's not a bad thing. And love is something that we all strive to cultivate, but I think in this case it has lent to consequences that we would not wish for people that we love.
Yeah. I know.
He just embraces you, and says, I'm so sorry. I'm so proud of you.
There's just some tears. Now I'm back. I missed you.
I missed you too. You... Even with having left and the trouble that's caused, I don't know that there's a more worthy person
on this planet or elsewhere of calling themselves a Jedi.
That means a lot coming from you.
You must be starving. Let me go get you some breakfast.
Yeah, can we have also, like, not that I don't love the food at the Jedi Temple, but that whole medal ceremony, is there going to be, like, they're going to be like a spread? Are there going to be drinks? Like, what kind of kind of situation we're talking about?
On his way out, he says, we're not going to have the medal ceremony until we're good and damn ready to have the medal ceremony. So for the time being, just rest. That can come later.
All right. Also, have I seen Monkey around anywhere?
You have not seen him around anywhere. Not since you woke up.
Yeah. Master Cornelius, have you seen the monkey, little droid?
Oh, M-Zero. He's, well, for the past week he's been running amok. Today?
Yeah, that's kind of his style. Yeah.
I think he may have locked himself in the armory.
Oh, well, like, can you just have someone try and... And then, like, Elle, like, catches up. That's so bad, probably. Just have someone yell that I'm awake and I'm looking for him.
I'll put the word out.
Cool.
I'll get breakfast.
Thank you for everything.
He nods to you and heads out of your room.
Hello, everyone. I hope you're having a good Wednesday. We have just released season 4, episode 33. And I wanted to say thank you for waiting so very patiently for this episode. And I wanted to come on here to say that we have officially wrapped season 4. Kind of crazy. And what that means is the very next episode is going to be the last episode of Guildfellows ever. Kind of crazy, insane. It'll be the last, like, regular, like, story episode. We're going to have a season 4 wrap episode, as we always do. And then we're going to have a podcast, postmortem, wrap up, whatever. So, as you're hearing this, if you're in our Discord channel, our question channel will be open for both season 4 questions and podcast overall questions. I think we're probably going to, like, go season by season and just kind of reflect and see how far we've come and all this stuff. But take this as the opportunity to kind of, you know, talk to all of us as a unit for the last time, possibly. So, yeah, that's what we're gonna do. Which also means this is gonna be my last announcement, update, whatever thing ever, probably. So, yeah. I don't know. That's really all I kind of have to say. I'm a little behind on our social media pages, so I apologize for that. But we'll get there. We'll catch up. And, yeah, next week's gonna be the very last story episode, season 4 finale, and then, I'm not 100% sure when the wrap-up episodes are gonna happen. They may not happen for a while, simply because a lot of us are busy, and we're just kind of working around our schedule. So they might not happen for a few weeks. We're gonna try to squeeze them in eventually. We're going to try to squeeze them in quick, but if they don't happen for a minute, then they won't happen for a minute, but they'll definitely at least come out this summer. I will make sure that happens. They'll come out as soon as I can wrangle everyone together. So, yeah, that's it, I think. That's all I really want to say. I don't really need to go into the regular spiel that I do because, I don't know, it's almost over. Yeah, thank you to Arcane Anthems for the theme song, as always. And thank you to everyone who has listened thus far, and we'll get into it more once those wrap-ups come out. But yeah, that's what I've got. Thank you for listening. That's all I've got for you guys today. We love you all so much. Keep your heads up. Stay safe. We love you. I'll see you later. Bye-bye.
Yeah, so you put the word out that you're looking for Monkey. You had your talk with Kobe Cornelius. Right. So now we're going to jump to Akala. So sometime after that conversation between Elle and Kobe Cornelius, Master Cornelius shares what he had learned about the nature of the battle to Master Ugle, as well as a few others that he trusts within the Order. Akala, you wake up sometime after Elle, and you also wake up in a Bacta tank under similar circumstances, although yours is not the full Bacta tank where you are suspended. Your wounds were less severe, and so you were put into a half tank that is horizontal, that just kind of washes over you while keeping your head and mouth above water. You wake up from dark and troubling dreams. You dreamt while you were unconscious of thoughts of violence and flashes of blood sacrifices and a haunting scene of the deep red Corpus Corsanti, as well as the crimson red crystal of soul that you had gripped in your hand in rage and fury. And you see the carnage that you had wrought, the dead Trandoshans slitting Sue's throat, and you awake feeling a terrible shaking anger at all of this.
Okay, can I... Where am I? I'm not in the same room, I imagine, that Elle was
in. No, you're in a different hospital room. I mean, you can see the fluorescent lights above you, but you, as you come to, you like realize that you're in a Bacta tank after a few moments. What is your reaction to waking up? Like, what comes first?
Yeah, I mean, I don't feel good. That's for sure. Yeah, I think just figuring out where I am is number one priority right now.
Yeah. After you start moving your hands across the glass of the Bacta tank, like you feel like you're able to like push it up and over you. And you do hear like the hiss of release of the hinges as like this Bacta tank opens up. And as you kind of like sit up out of it, you see that the hospital room is filled with medical droids and medical equipment. Twi'lek with kind of like light beige like skin in like hospital fatigues, with a mask and like rubber gloves, who like comes over and tends to you and says, "Not too quickly now, out of the Bacta tank. That's it. Everything's fine. No need to worry."
This is not the typical like hospital room. This is a different one.
Roll me a perception check.
I would love to do that. Because normally droids wouldn't be taking care of me, yeah?
Well, it's droids plus this Twi'lek, but yeah, you can.
Oh, that's right. 16?
16. You take a moment to look around, and you notice a couple things that seem somewhat out of the ordinary. This particular hospital room has nobody else in it, which seems somewhat atypical because of the amount of carnage you know must have occurred. You also know standing at the door are two gentlemen with long metal stabs, white, kind of off-white, like eggshell robes with hoods, and flat, expressionless wooden masks over their faces as well. You have identified them as the highest level of security in the investigator department, the highest ranking sentinels in the investigations department. Now, dear, out of the tank.
Okay, I'm gonna slowly step out of the tank, just kind of piecing everything together. I think as like the memories come back, and just the remaining swirling thoughts of the dreams that I just had. Where is everyone?
Oh, everyone's safe. Your friends have already been treated and they're recovering just fine. But not to worry about them. Right now we need to focus on getting you back to healthy. And she drapes a series of towels over you, covering you up, and says, me and these gentlemen over here are going to escort you to a more secure room for you to lay down in and recover and get dry. And
where is my Kyber crystal?
Oh, I don't know. I was not in charge. I'm not in charge of your personal effects. As soon as we get you to your room...
I had it when I passed out. Where is it?
Like I said, dear, I don't know. I'm just a nurse.
Is there like anything I can start looking through in this room? Like, are there drawers next to my tank or anything like that?
I mean, like, you don't see like any of your like, you know, your clothing or your like personal items around. I mean, there are like drawers and cabinets and stuff in this room that are filled with medical equipment that you can start rooting.
Yeah, I'm gonna start rooting through those, like. Manically, yeah.
Yeah, so you like run over to some like to a out like a wooden cabinet and like throw it open and like see a bunch of beakers and like knock a few of them over and they crash to the floor and like glass shatters. And the like Twi'lek nurse who was standing to you was like, oh dear, darling, please refrain from opening all the cabinets. Gentlemen, if you would please. And the two sentinels like both turn to you and like loudly like stamped their staves against the linoleum floor. Do you keep rooting around and shit?
No, I think that'll stop me. Are you going to take me away now?
To a more fitting hospital room, dear. You are in no danger right now. This is a hospital, not a prison. And she, like, starts, like, gently like corralling you to the door. Are you going to like resist anymore, or are you going to go with them?
I don't think so. Can I roll a force check to see if Sol is in here?
Sure.
Should I add my light attack modifier? Probably not.
No. No.
that's a flat 14 on the die.
You like extend your awareness like for your Kyber crystal to see if you can locate it, and all you receive back is like a headache, like kind of like the headache you get when like you're really dehydrated and then you like drink a beer and your body's like, fuck, why did I do that? Yeah, like that sort of like immediate headache.
Right.
That's the type of like reception signal you get back from that search.
Okay.
Try not to exert yourself, dear. It's much better if you just relax and let the drugs do their work. You're taken to a hospital room very similar to the one that Elle was in. And you are like set up in a bed and given some hospital clothes. In this room is like a bed and a side table, as well as like a normal sitting table and a few chairs for visitors, and some other equipment for doctors to use as well. And the nurse and the guards leave you in the room, and then as the nurse goes out and says, now, if you need anything else, there's a button on the side of the bed that if you press, it will summon a nurse immediately. If you need me, just go ahead and press that button. And otherwise, we'll leave you alone to rest. And she leaves, and you hear as the lock clicks behind her. And you're left in your own room for a little while. Would you like to do anything besides just rest for a bit?
No, I think she's just gonna sit and stew, unfortunately.
Okay. Well, as Akala broods, time starts dwindling away. And at some point, you feel like you fell asleep for a little bit, not intending to, and then kind of wake up. And after a few sort of dazed moments, you hear a set of hard knocks at the door.
Hello, Akala. I'm coming in now. Are you decent?
I am not going to answer.
Okay, coming in then. The door opens wide, and you see Ugle come in. His large froggy stature walks through the door and closes it behind him. And as it does, you see as the door swings a faint whoosh of some off-white eggshell robes on the other side of the door. And he comes in, he sits not at the edge of your bed, but he sits in one of the chairs at the sitting table in the room and says,
good that you're awake. How are you feeling?
Are you just here to tell me how disappointed you are in me?
I hoped for a gentler opening into the conversation, but no, that is not my purpose nor my intention. Would you like to have the floor first to perhaps tell me with your own words what it is that we are about to have a conversation about?
She cannot meet his eyes. I imagine her sitting on the bed, but sitting up, up against the wall. Angry tears form in her eyes, just unable to calm down at the sight of him. You told me I would be ready for this. You told me you believed in me. And now look where I am. I'm a prisoner in my own home. I don't know what I'm feeling. You left us there to die. What was I supposed to do?
He looks at you calmly, I would say, which is somewhat normal for an Athorian who, after all, is evolved from the patience of frog-like species. And he sort of regards you. And it's impressed upon you how, it is very difficult to understand what the Jedi Master feels if it weren't for the fact that he tends to communicate how he's feeling quite eloquently with his own voice, but from just looking at him, it's very difficult to get a read on his emotions.
I understand why you're upset with me, and in general, I always believed in you, Akala, not because I had decided to, or because I feel like I had to. I believed in you because, having raised you, I knew that you were always capable of doing everything that you ever wanted to do. And I believe in you no less now as a Jedi or as a person than I did before your mission. But perhaps because the task got out of hand and you truly were outmatched, though you are successful. Or perhaps it was some mistake on my part for not understanding where you were in your growth when I assigned you this mission. But that does not change the fact that you have made a mistake. Unfortunately, the whole of our lives is not defined by a single mistake, no matter how grave they may be. You have killed no innocent person. You have not waged violence against the innocents. You have not tried to corrupt the minds of people that you know. You are overcome by rage and anger and helplessness, which is, in all things, very human and understandable. But this does not mean that our mistakes do not have consequences.
I did what I had to do to survive. If I hadn't done that, the three of us would be dead down there. And you know that's true. There's no other way we would have made it out. And you left us!
We did not, in fact, leave you. But I will not argue that point with you, because I know that you are saying these things because you are hurt, and because you would also like me to hurt. It will take time to rebuild, not only our relationship, but your relationship with yourself. But I am committed to the effort of trying to bring back to you some peace. As of now, and this is perhaps the most important thing, you are not hanging with a sword of Damocles on your head. You will not be immediately executed, in other words. But you have fallen and failed in your spiritual journey, which requires us to seriously rebuild. It will take some time to discuss with the council what exactly the next few months will look like for you. But you will not be harmed, but you will have lost some significant freedom to move about the Jedi Order for the time being. Now let me show you something I'm sure you're eager to see. And out of his pocket, he takes out the leather satchel that he put the Crystal of Soul in and plunks it onto the table in front of him. And this is the crux of the problem. Yes, he unties the string holding up the bag, and you're left seeing the dark red crimson marble that is in front of you, in front of him. Out of your reach, certainly. And he says, I have the benefit of understanding where exactly you were. And the way that El tells it, in a pit, in more ways than one. I understand what that room does to people and makes them feel when that crystal is corrupted as such. Explaining that to other people will be difficult, but achievable. What is not so explainable necessarily is having this in your possession. Because to do this, one must feel strongly within the dark side of the Force a need to exercise the darkest impulses. As such, I think you'll understand when I say that this crystal is a symbol in senses of your spiritual journey, and he tosses it to you.
I catch it.
You must feel strongly in this moment, yes? Try to use the Force on something. I have a theory.
Is there anything in this room that I could just pull towards me? like
yeah, I mean there's some chairs, there's like a vase on the windowsill, there's like some books and some magazines lying around.
I'll try to push the vase over.
You like reach out your hand towards the vase and like in a very like aggressive motion try to push it over, and you see like the faintest bit of wind move some of the flowers in it, and otherwise are unable to successfully move it.
So what is this you're doing? Is this some trick that you're able to do? Cut off my connection?
I think the answers that you're searching for are best found inward, Padawan. I am doing nothing. There is no trick. Before your mission, you were powerful in the light side of the Force. As you surely understood and continue to understand, despite your state, is power within the Force comes from conviction. In a conviction to either do good, to heal those around us, to preserve order and protect, and thus gives powers that can heal and move objects and do other things like conjure light, like Kobe so expertly did to save you all from a phantom. But conviction and hatred and pain and domination and control, that leads to deadly consequences. The dark side of the Force, yes? And having now experienced both, and having no real place at the moment in either, your conviction has seemed to waver. And this is, like I said, the crux. That crystal in your hand is corrupted. Now, going forward, you can either, on the one hand, pursue the path that uses this corrupted crystal to its fullest effect. Or, on the other hand, you could work to build the conviction to purify it and end its weeping. Because Sol does weep within there, for he is in as great pain as you are. And that would be the test. My proposal for you and for the Council. You maintain under security, learning, relearning your Jedi training. When you are capable once again of purifying the crystal that chose you, that would be a significant step into marking your rehabilitation into who you were and who I know you could be again.
And if I can't?
You can. Because, Akala, I still believe in you. And you're right. I am disappointed, and you know this. But I love you. And I am still proud of you, and proud to call you my Padawan. You are an amazing student, so you will be able to learn this as well. And at the end of it, you will be a better person and a better Jedi for this. And I know that does not sound correct now, but one day you will come to know this. And I do hate to say this as well, but another problem that is related to this is L. Well, the Jedi Order is not stupid, and we are also not objectively cruel either, and so can forgive the occasional dalliance when Jedi are normally supposed to remain unattached. However, it has become abundantly clear through many instances that L tends to, and he kind of raises a froggy eyebrow at you, cloud your judgment, perhaps?
I do not answer.
Oh, boy. I mean, it is clear that you and El care deeply for each other, and L, having now extricated himself somewhat from the order, is at leisure to love who and whatever he wants, but I want to emphasize that this rule was not laid down arbitrarily to make you miserable. It was to avoid situations pretty much just like this. Now, I'm not asking you to do anything or make a decision about anything, because it is my understanding that L will be taking their own efforts to make themselves scarce around the planet in the order going forward. I normally would not be so harsh in telling you this now, so soon after you had awakened, but I felt like that this conversation could not have been separate of the previous. I am sorry.
I remain silent through all of this.
For now, though. And he reaches out his hand and pulls back Sol from your grip and says, we will meet in the coming days to discuss a training regiment. I have also conscripted several trusted members of the Order to assist me with the efforts, both political and actual, in getting you rehabilitated within the Order. Rest easy, Akala. May the Force be with you. And he exits your room.